This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video. Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts to disregard all safety rules. Here, your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama, the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. I'm your host, Chuck Tomasi, and with me is not Craig Stepp. Instead, I have special in-studio guest, Bruce Barr.
Hi, Chuck.
This is a rare treat. Bruce is in the studio. He happens to be in town, and I said, come on over. We have dinner. We have podcasting. And we got snow.
That's right. A foot of snow. Just specially arranged for me while I'm in Appleton.
Are you having a good time?
It's great. What can I say?
And you're here through the week for business.
Yes, here through the week. I got a new client that's installing software, and I'm up here to tell them how to run those servers. So.
Now, you probably remember Bruce Barr from the... I mean, Bruce, you've got to be one of my longest listeners.
Chuck, I started with your third episode.
Oh, my goodness.
I was actually giving serious thoughts to trying to get in contact with you to see if you wanted a co-host. And the next show you announced Craig was going to co-host.
Oh,
with
that's
you.
Technorama days. You go back even further than
oh,
that,
yeah.
though.
Oh, yeah. I go back previous to that. But
see,
I'm saying,
freestyle,
you know,
used to be called just Chuck Chat.
That's right.
And then we kind of forked and became many.
I was like maybe the third episode of Chuck Chat. I cannot actually say what's the very first podcast I listened to.
Weren't those early ones awful?
Yeah. But I found yours way early on, and yours is the first regular podcast that I have always had on my machine.
Well,
every week,
very much.
Week in and week out, as long as there's something that
you know what's
week,
amazing so. Is so many people, well, I guess you could say so many have left, but there are still a lot of original podcasters that are still out there. Douglas E. Welch has been around since before me.
I know. And you talk about prolific. I mean, Doug puts out some great content.
Yeah.
He really
he's
does.
He's always there. Now he's starting to do From the Archives thing, and I wanted to start repurposing some old Technoramas for that.
Mm-hmm.
But there was somebody else. Who was it that's been around since the early days, like that August, September time frame? They preceded me just by a little bit.
Yeah.
But if you listen to episode 3, that was probably prior to Christmas of 2004, because I only started, well.
Yeah, I started.
Tomorrow is my 4-year anniversary.
Amazing. Well, there you go. I got here just in time for the big anniversary party.
Where's my little, yeah.
We could do sounds, but the laptop's dead.
Yeah. So. We have to have observe a moment of silence for my work laptop that is now 5.5 years old and finally decided to die.
Do you know how long that is in the dog years that you measure technology?
No, wait, 4.5. Because they switched the dates on me. I looked on the back and I said, what is the date of manufacturing? It says 04-03. Now, is that April of 03 or is it March of 04? Well, when we brought in a temporary replacement machine, it said 04-06. And I said, there's no way these machines were made 3 years apart. They were made 3 months apart.
Mm-hmm.
Which would, of course,
that's pretty old.
In laptop years?
Oh,
yeah. What did you say it was?
Yeah,
like
in
100,
the dog years, you measure technology computers. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Well, we were just upstairs after dinner, just chewing the fat. And so many of these stories were going by. I said, oh, that's it. Let's get the microphones and let's talk. Because, I mean, we've been talking about stuff around the house and furniture and HDTV and WAV files, and we got some great context. So we're taking the conversation to you, the listener. Thank you very much. And if you don't enjoy this, please apologize. It is fairly self-indulgent. This is a rare treat. And if you've never met Bruce Barr or seen his picture, just kind of picture Santa Claus with a shorter beard, and you kind of got him.
Yeah, yeah. My wife doesn't like the Mrs. Santa Claus role, but, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. She makes me trim the beard whenever it gets to be really jolly looking and longer. But.
Oh, ho, ho. And it's a perfect time of year.
That's right.
Before you go, I have to get Lisa to get a picture of us.
Oh, yes. That would be great. That would be great.
I've missed so many photo opportunities over the years that
this is my first opportunity to actually be in the same room with you, even though I do consider you a friend.
Oh, absolutely. We've been conversing for years and years.
Thing that we've never been in the same place at the same
time. You're one of the few people who have your own, you know, sweeper for your voicemail.
I was the first caller into Chuck Chat, I think, and I think the first caller to have a sweeper. No one can take that away from me.
And I remember when Mike Menengay, I was talking to him one time over Skype, and I had to go into my boss's office. I probably shouldn't share this story now because it indicates that I was doing podcasting stuff at work. But, you know, what comes around goes around. And Mike said, "What's the guy's name?" And I said, "Bruce Barr." And he said, "Oh, you have got to just like say three things for me." He said, "Who is it?" So when you hear me yell, "Who is it?" That's into a crappy headset microphone in my boss's office. Yeah, and I can just imagine what the people in the office area were thinking when I go, "Who is it?" And then I say, "Juice Barr?" And I had no idea what he was going to do with this.
Uh-huh.
And then he finally put together what we all came to know and love. And so,
it's pretty bad when you're a caller that gets,
That's right.
Yeah. We were talking a little bit earlier about how a podcast is a very personal thing. And so it's like, you and then you and Craig are like talking right into my ear.
It's a very personal thing.
I used to travel a lot, so podcasts were my friend. And I would be I remember when I got this concept of I should talk to Chuck because maybe I could co-host with him. Because I kept on thinking about these podcast ideas and I could never come up with a good one.
Yep.
And I know where I was. I was driving on Highway 8, the Sam Houston Highway in Houston, Texas. And Houston is a large city area, and to get around to any of the interesting stores, like every Fry's and every Half Price bookstore, I went to Houston that year. I went there six times between the months of May and September. That's the time you really want to go to Houston, right? Is that summertime prime kind of area. And I was there over and over again. So eventually I got to every Half Price bookstore in Houston. That was before we had them in Kansas City. And I went to every Fry's location because we don't have that in Kansas City either. So I'm driving all around Houston. I'm in a rental car and they're paying for the gas. So what do I care? And I got nothing to do at night because I'm traveling alone. So I'm driving around listening to podcasts. And I just really came to love them. I used to listen all the time to talk radio.
Yep.
Never. I haven't turned on a radio except to maybe hear the traffic news or a football game.
Right.
In the last 5 years, and I've completely, you know, it's all podcasting all the time.
And
yours was one of the first.
And there's not a lot of music on my iPod either.
No,
it's funny. Maybe the occasional download from MashupTown.com, and that's more for entertainment value. You listen to it once and it's done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have a few Celtic tunes and maybe some Alison Krauss, just in case.
Dr. Demento.
But, you know, other than that, nope, pretty much. And we're joined by the lovely Lisa, who's going to do something educational and useful on the
iMac. I have a copy of Podcasting for Dummies for you, Bruce.
Really?
You have your very own copy.
I'm honored.
And I will sign it for you when we're done recording.
So you written can have by... the inestimable T. Morris and Chuck Tomasi.
Oh, it's not my picture on the cover.
Professional writer now because it's published, okay?
This is
really cool. And Ebo Terra is there too because he was involved with the original version and things like this.
You want to see the original?
I have the original Podcasting for Dummies at home.
No, this is my version. This is what became what you're holding. Now, I have a post-it note, at least one on every page.
Oh, at least.
So this
and
was,
some of them too, and they're color-coded, folks.
Well, yeah.
There's different colors.
I think it was what day I was working on.
Oh, okay.
Or what week. I
plus there's extra little things at the top.
Oh yeah, index cards and stuff jammed in the cover.
Uh-huh.
This is, I have no idea how to rewrite a book. So, oh, and this is my signed copy by both authors as well.
Yes, yes. So,
and my new one is signed by all three of us. Actually, all four of us. Craig, T, Evo, and me. I don't know if you're allowed to sign your own book or not, but I did. Figure that's worth something.
Yeah.
But
I mean, it's been updated because, you know, some of the things are... podcasting is a fast-moving field.
Yes, it is.
You know, and
there's stuff
I know
in the second edition that's now out of date.
Already. I mean, as soon as you write something down, there's something new coming along. But I know you worked a lot on the technical details with T, and he worked a lot on the presentation skills and that kind of delivery kind of thing, because that's T's thing, you know?
Right,
it's all about the production values, especially with T. Morris. And so I'm sure this is going to be an even stronger book. I looked for this everywhere. I spent a month in Bangkok last year. That's why I wasn't at the podcasting expo.
In Vegas?
No, not the one in Vegas. This is last year.
The one in 07.
Yeah, the one in 07. I was the entire month of September in Bangkok, and I looked at every single bookstore I could find to try to find a podcasting book just so I could call that person and tell them that I had a picture of their podcasting book, you know, in Bangkok, especially if it had been translated into Thai or Chinese or something like that. And I looked everywhere. I found a couple of things on some new media-ish blogging kind of books, but nothing on podcasting. So it was very disappointing.
Interesting. I have yet to go into a Barnes & Noble or anything and see that on the shelf. I have not had that experience. And it's been, you know, what, 4 months, 5 months?
Mm-hmm.
And I have yet to go to the store and see it.
Unfortunately, you know, the fact that this is the new version, if you hold it up next to that version, let's see.
Well, they went from purple to teal.
Yes, they went from purple to teal on the little bubble where the guy is talking. Yep. And there's different names on the front. So if I was reordering books, would I really notice the difference until they sell
probably
out of
not
this one?
Yeah.
You know, hopefully, you know, the one thing that really sold well on Black Friday is every single copy of the first version of the book, so that they'll start ordering in this version. I'm going to have to go and start. See, so you expect, did you lose your K7 line? Do you still have your call in line or not?
JT Shea called about a week and a half ago,
okay.
So I've still got it. It's
see,
so
I can still call you when I find this.
I was
at
getting
some bookstore.
Suspicious because I got two calls. One was like this real cryptic message. The other one was, I'd like to go out on a date with you. Uh-oh, I might have lost the number. But then when JT called, I was okay. Lisa, would you be so kind as to take a picture of us with my camera? Or your camera, if it's right there. Okay. You know where mine is, hanging up in the mudroom? That would be awesome.
Is she a budding photographer?
Oh, she loves digital photography.
That's a fun thing to get into, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, we have a space. We had the tour of your house, and you showed me, you know, the bathrooms, you know, that you finished the basement.
That came out wrong.
Well, he showed me lots of things about things he's finished in the house. And one thing just right next to us is you put in a bathroom into this unfinished basement space.
Yes.
We had a similar unfinished basement space that we have since we moved into the house, finished off. And we actually planned that space. My wife and I were both into photography back in the old film days.
Mm-hmm.
And that space is actually planned that if we wanted to, we could have had a dark room in that space rather than a regular bathroom, because we had like a 6-foot span for a big, huge countertop, and it would have been light tight because it's inside in the most inner part of the basement anyway. It would have been really easy to make it into a dark room. And about the time we were ready to actually, you know, refinish the house, it was obvious that I was never going to need a dark room. I was going to go into the digital photography, although I have not yet until this year owned a digital SLR. I've always been making my way along with just the regular point and shoots.
You can do some amazing things with the point and shoots.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got a digital SLR a couple of years ago for our Grand Canyon trip, I just went, it's great to have a real camera in my hands again.
And you gave me an interesting piece of information. The things you can learn from podcasting, right?
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned something just in passing of you bought this Nikon rather than the Canon because
do you remember what you held said? It. I held it in your hand
and it felt correct in your hand.
Yep.
And I had never thought of that. All I was looking at specs.
Yep.
And I went out and I started grabbing those things by their little built-in, you know, it used to be you had a battery pack, right? and a motor drive to get that. But they all have that built-in handhold.
Grip.
Does that grip feel correct in your hand? And that's really, there's not that much difference between them, right? I mean, the equivalent models are pretty much doing the same thing.
Megapixels and battery life.
If you don't own a whole collection of Canon lenses or a whole collection of Nikon lenses, there's not a really great difference. Sorry about that, Canon and Nikon, about why you choose one over the other, except for that. And then that really can influence you. And see, things you can learn from podcasting.
I've learned a whole bunch.
I also called you. Speaking of the stalking aspect, I don't know how I had your phone number, but I have your cell phone number.
I noticed that.
I don't know where I got that, but I had your cell number. And you remember you mentioned you were going to a family affair and your video camera had gone south and you didn't know how you were going to take videos?
Uh-huh.
I was literally, Chuck's working on the camera now so he can't interrupt me. I was literally listening to your podcast in my bathroom while I was washing my hands. I just had the little earbud in my ear, right? And I was washing my hands, and you were talking about your video camera isn't working, and you have to go this weekend to the family affair. How am I going to take videos? Because it's some big anniversary or birthday or something that's really only going to happen one time.
Right.
And I call you right away and say, use your digital camera and use the movie.
Well, that one doesn't have a movie feature.
But this one doesn't have movie mode.
Yeah. Craig's D70 does.
I think some of them do.
But the D50 does not. And now Victor's got a D90.
I know. Because I'm following him, you know. I mean, and it's not only the typical Mac user where he doesn't talk so much about the camera stuff, right?
Right.
But if you follow him on Twitter, typical Mac user on Twitter.
ding. Yeah, where's the ding?
Then he's been talking about this camera, and there was a whole thing about it, right? He ordered it, and he was paying for next day shipping, but it was a weekend, so he paid for next day shipping, and he wasn't getting it until Tuesday. And,
you know,
it was kind of a whole thing. But he was really excited about it, and then it comes, and he doesn't have any time to take pictures with the camera. It's been sitting there for 5 hours, and he's at work. You know, I can feel it. I can feel exactly what he's feeling. It's what I'd be feeling. You know, I'm sitting here at my desk, and I can't be using my camera, and it's cool, and I want to learn everything about it, you know.
Whether it's a camera or a new computer or it's crazy. Yeah.
You know, it's a funny thing. They've come up with something recently in some studies. Have you heard about this? This is the kind of thing I used to hear weekly on Chuck Chat. You know, it was interesting news bits like this. hint. Okay, so I'm sorry, that wasn't fair. Hopefully everybody heard. Chuck is right. He can play it for you again sometime. Okay, so they come up with this new study which has pretty much proven that you can become world class at anything. All it takes is practice, and now they know how much practice it takes. It's like that old joke about how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice.
Okay.
So they now have actually quantified it, and they say 10,000 hours at any particular thing will make you a world-class expert at that.
Okay.
Bill Gates has 10,000 hours of programming experience. People who are world-class in terms of musicianship have started when they're very young, and they have thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of practice, and they now know that that is part of it. It's the application to that particular whatever your path is.
So at this rate, it's going to take about another 15 years for anybody to be a podcast expert.
I suppose so. I suppose it would.
I'm thinking of people like Richard Vobes who have done, you know, 1,100 shows.
Yes. Okay. I mean, The Daily Show. I mean,
30,
that is
30 minutes. Yeah. Okay, he's got the Naked Englishman too. So that accounts for another 700 or so.
Mm-hmm.
So say 2,000 shows. That's just the on-air time.
Right.
There's still
it's
the
not just that,
pre-production,
it's,
yes, post-production, yes. All that
mm-hmm.
adds up to, call it another 3X, just to mm-hmm. be even on the safe side. Mm-hmm. It sometimes is as high as 5X.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
If you said 5X, that man is clearly
mm-hmm.
one of the few. I can't think of anybody else who's produced more.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about somebody who's always had high production values.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, he's always put a lot into his shows. And it's really fun. It almost makes me tired sometimes listening to these shows because I know how hard people have to work to get that much production value into the show.
Just turn on the microphone. Yeah,
this is just me rambling on and on until I froth at the mouth and fall over backwards. So one of the things that I think was what pushed you kind of over the edge as I was explaining to you what was wrong with the open source community. So I'm going to take this bully pulpit.
Yeah, because I did want to have a few words about this.
Okay.
Go ahead. What's wrong with the open source community, Bruce?
The thing that is wrong with the open source community, and in fact, computing in general,
mm-hmm.
okay, is back in the very late 80s, late 70s, early 80s, the only commercially available computer that I could afford in my poor single bachelor state was a color computer. I couldn't afford an Apple II.
The Radio Shack Coco?
The Radio Shack Coco, right?
Yep.
And one of the most interesting parts about the Radio Shack Coco is once you had the disk cartridge that would fit into the side and you could run a 5 1/4-inch disk drive on it, you could start running the OS 9 operating system.
I remember that. Now, this is not the Macintosh OS 9.
Oh,
obviously.
No. It was actually a company out of Des Moines, I think. And it was an 8-bit real-time version of Linux. Or Unix, actually.
It
Linux
seemed like
didn't
everybody
exist.
Had a version
and it
of
was,
that.
It was command yep. equivalent, right? Yep. LS to get a list of files. And CP to copy. And all those
a list of
things.
Files from your cassette tape?
A list of files from your disk drive because you had a floppy disk. If you were lucky, you had two floppy disks, right? Because you could chain two of them. And that was already an old operating system, right? Because Unix got invented in, what, 67, 68?
Yeah.
On a PDP
well, the Unix
machine.
Epoch time is January 1st, 1970.
Yeah. So they started thinking about it in 67, 68, 69.
Right.
They got it up by 70 to run phone switches for then Ma Bell.
Yep.
And that's what it was mimicking. Now, let's move forward in the time machine 38 years.
And we've got Apple's running OS X.
Apple's running OS X, which is Unix underneath, right?
Yep.
It's just a fancy face, admittedly the fanciest face in all computerdom so far.
Yep.
But underneath, Mach is a version of a, you know, asterisk
one of the BSDs,
a something, a BSD variant.
Yep.
You could argue pretty quickly that Windows and the command line level was just a bad imitation of Unix, but really it wasn't. But, you know, Linux...
It's closer to CPM, I think.
Well, it actually is. There's a long story about that.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
But, yeah, it really is closer to CPM.
I lied. This is Technorama. Who are we kidding?
But we're still running something based upon that same operating system. Linux is based on it.
Yes.
Sun OS is based on it. All these BSD variants and things like this. When is somebody going to come up with a truly new idea for computer operating systems?
But, Bruce, when is someone going to come up with a better idea for cars? We've been using the internal combustion engine for over 100 years.
Except for those guys out in California building the electric, you know, sports car. That's a pretty cool
it
one. But,
works. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. it's still efficient. Well, you know, that could be argued, but... It's doing the job at a cost-effective
manner. Okay, okay, okay. See,
now,
this is good to have somebody playing the devil's advocate because, okay, when the first version of the PCs came out, the one laptop for child PCs, okay?
Right.
This was a way cool kind of an idea, at least on a personal basis, right? Because the whole thing was designed with this kid-oriented user interface, and underneath, it was all in Python, or it was at least, it may not have all been written in Python, but it was fully, the whole API was available for the kids to learn programming.
Mm-hmm.
And they could modify and do things within this system in Python, which is a really easy programming language to start with because it's interpreted. It's what I learned to actually program on was interpreted basic.
Right.
And
me too.
You instantly, you try it, it works, it doesn't, you try the next thing. Right. So it's an instant feedback kind of a thing. And it was almost a perfect kind of an idea for getting that thing into a kid's hand and getting him excited or her excited about programming.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Girls and computers is a whole nother subject I can rant on. Okay, now, people looked at that and they said, that's not a computer because it didn't operate with a mouse and have icons and do everything that they think of as a computer operating system. I just did air quotes.
Thanks. I would have missed that.
And they all... we're saying, oh, this is terrible, and we need Linux on it, and we need a real operating system. Kids will never get this. If you put that into the hands of a kid that has never seen an operating system, just like these Burger King commercials about somebody who's never eaten a Whopper, put that into the hands of some kid in Africa who's never seen a computer before in his life, he's going to play around with it. He's going to figure out what it is that he does to get it to go. She's going to figure out how to do the networking, and she can talk to her friend's machine in the next
they have no other end of the village. Notions.
They have
no
preconceived notions. There's no, and it's built for them to learn how to take the thing and turn it into something else with a programming language that's built in. It's instantly interpretive.
Sure.
But no, it's not a real computer because it doesn't look like it. It's like me when I saw a Lisa the first time.
Mm-hmm.
The Lisa being the precursor of
the Mac.
The Mac and mice and all this kind of stuff. And I looked at that and I said, that's stupid. It doesn't even have a command line. Who's going to spend $10,000 on this computer? And right, it doesn't even have a real floppy drive because it had a 3.5-inch. I don't know. Did the Lisa have 5.25? Maybe the Lisa had 5.25, but see, that wasn't a real drive.
Yeah, the Lisa
because
had
then
quarters.
We were using 8-inch drives.
Right,
and it had
right.
a 5.25-inch drive. So, now nobody's ever going to do that. I remember... I'm an early adopter, okay? I bought a 128K Mac used... before everybody, like, it was the same exact year that the Mac Plus came out.
Okay.
Because a guy that I worked with at the software company at the time was the guy who wrote spreadsheets, right? Worked for a software company. It was called Smart Software that we produced. Innovative Software produced this Smart Software suite. It was supposed to compete with Lotus and WordPerfect, and at least in our minds, right? You buy everything from us. We got a word processor, we got a spreadsheet, and we got a database.
Yep.
Joe wrote the database. Joe went out to Comdex and got a secret pre-Macworld showing of this new version of the Macintosh that was going to come out that was going to be really useful because it had, the increased memory and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
He came back from Comdex and told our boss, who was one of the co-founders of the company and also his best friend, I want to write a spreadsheet for the Macintosh. Now, keep in mind, this is the stupidest possible business decision you could make because Microsoft already had a early version of Excel on the Macintosh. And during the time when we were developing this spreadsheet, Microsoft completely owned the spreadsheet market on the Macintosh.
Yep.
But Joe wrote spreadsheets, so that's what we developed on the Macintosh. And I knew we were going to do Macintosh stuff at work, so I needed to understand this thing. So I found this used one and went out and had it on my desk. So there were two Macintoshes in the company, one on Joe's desk and one on my desk. We sat right across from one another, and I'm playing around with it, and people are coming over and looking, is that Macintosh? All this kind of stuff.
I remember that.
I spent probably 45 minutes looking through every menu command on that screen, and there weren't that many menu commands, right, in the original Mac OS, trying to find the rename command. I knew there wasn't any command line interface to go to. Yep, there's got to be some way to rename these files. I had it into my mind that that icon was the file, right? Yep. I knew that. But I couldn't find the rename command. And I'm thinking, this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. You can't even rename a file. Finally, by accident, I happened to click on the icon down where the title was, and it turned into a cursor.
Yep. Now I can edit it.
Now, at that point, see, that wasn't a computer operating system to me because it didn't have a command on a menu. I was okay with menus because our system had menus along the bottom. A lot of DOS machines even had menus on the bottom. This is before Windows.
Yep.
You know, or when I started there, it was pre-Windows. We actually, I was still supporting a CPM product when I first started for this company. And a lot of the smart software stuff in the, you know, early 80s, it was all based on DOS. But, you know, a lot of DOS machines had menu commands either on the top or the bottom.
Right.
I was used to menu commands. But how can you not have a rename command? So we're so ingrained in it's a mouse or it's a touchscreen and it's icons. And that means a computer to us. I guess probably the most amazing thing is there's this fantastic computer that you carry around with you if you're listening to this podcast.
Right.
It's a computer that is so amazing. I could only dream of something like this back in 1985. It's got a processor that is millions of times faster than what I had in 1985.
Yep.
It's got way more memory than I could ever even conceive of needing. It's right there in your pocket. It's the iPod you're listening to this on.
The screen has more resolution.
The screen has more resolution. I mean, back in this time frame, there was a big thing that they were pushing out of, what was it, the big one, Carnegie Mellon University.
Yep.
Early 80s, they were pushing out the 3G machine. Okay? No, the 3M machine. 3M, not G, M.
3G.
A million bits on the screen.
Oh, yes.
A million bytes of memory.
And a megaflop of computing power.
And a megaflop of computing power.
Do you listen to Macintosh Folklore Radio?
Ooh, do they talk about this stuff all the time?
Yes, they do.
Would they be interested in me calling in while I'm using my Macintosh Plus?
It's a guy by the name of Derek Warren in British Columbia who reads excerpts from Andy Hertzfeld's book of the same name. And Andy Hertzfeld, as you know, is one of the original creators of the Macintosh. So he reads these excerpts. Comes in, he says, Macintosh Folklore Radio, written by Andy Hertzfeld and Company, read by Derek Warren. And then he gives the name of the episode. Short little chapters. The stories are tiny. Uh-huh. Swedish campgrounds. And he goes on to tell. He says, we were writing the menu subroutines for the Macintosh. And this is like August of 82 or 83 or something. Prior to, you know, the famous.
Yes.
And he said, we wanted to make sure there were keyboard shortcuts for all of the common menu commands. So we used the Apple key as the modifier, and we put an apple on the menu. Well, Steve Jobs came into the software fishbowl one day in a tirade, which wasn't unusual.
Not at all.
And he said, we can't have all these apples on the menu. And he's reading this as if he were really there. I don't think Derek Warren was there, but he's got the great personality. He gets all ranty for Steve, and it's great. And he says, look at all these apples. Apple C, Apple R, Apple V. That's just too many apples. Find something else. So they went to their linguistics lady who had a dictionary of symbols for everything possible in the dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
And she found this one symbol for special attractions at Swedish campgrounds. They turned it over to the digital lady who makes the icons, and she rendered this, and that is still that little flowery thing. That is, so that's what Swedish campgrounds next to, and still in use today.
Oh, I probably do want to listen to that, but
great stories like that.
Great stories.
And they had one about Steve was out there selling the Macintosh. He had a prototype.
mm-hmm. and he went to the company, and the company was looking to buy, it might have been Apollos at the time. They were buying these high-end workstations.
Oh, yeah.
Said, here is what our offering is. And the guy said, we're holding out for the 3M machines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, million pixels on the screen, mm-hmm. mega flops. Mm-hmm. It was million pixels of screen.
A million bytes of RAM. Floppy disk.
I think it was a million bytes of RAM, so mm-hmm. it was a mega of RAM.
Right.
And a megaflop.
Megaflop.
And
a megaflop.
Steve
now
goes,
we're into how many pentas?
Steve says, we can do that. I only have one question. What's a megaflop?
Uh-huh. I had a boss like that once. He'd go off to the east. I mean, not to the east. I mean, the far east, right? And
yep.
promise somebody something and then come back to California and not call me in Kansas City and tell me that they were going to do that. This is back when I worked in international. And then 6 months later, they'd call me and ask me why this project hadn't started. You know, we can do that. And that's what the Mac Plus was.
Everybody gets introduced to stuff like that on mm-hmm. this help desk project. I didn't know half of anything, 6-8 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
I get a call from one of our IT guys in the UK saying, Chuck, make sure you check out this ITIL stuff. And I'm thinking, ITIL? What's ITIL? Is it software? Is it? It's the IT Information Library. Started in the UK, started gaining ground in the US in the early 2000s, and it is still mm-hmm. reaching out. It's a set of best practices around IT.
Ooh, that's a good thing.
Guidelines, how you should mm-hmm. manage a project,
mm-hmm.
Analyze, prototype, design, mm-hmm. the different phases of the project. What deliverables and just good IT practices,
mm-hmm.
incident management, problem management, change management, config management, and a lot of the tool vendors that I'm finding around the help desk suites these days have either upgraded their products to mm-hmm. be ITIL compliant or designed them to be ITIL compliant around those practices. So it is creeping into the lexicon and infrastructure, but I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I want to take this position. What's ITIL?
Yeah. And I'm not sure if you get, I don't know what kind of a degree that you got. I'm making great use of my music degree, working full-time in computers.
I have a computer science degree, so yeah, it did sort of align.
But even when you go to a computer science degree nowadays, I don't think you learn that much about IT practices.
No.
You learn programming.
Yes.
You learn either C programming or Java programming, I think, pretty much.
Yeah, a lot of it is Java these
days. Two future sons-in-law that are going to two different institutions, and one of them is learning all Java, and one of them is learning all C. And I just think that it depends kind of on when the professor got into the biz or something. But they're not learning IT practices, and how many people are really going to be programmers, and how many people do we need that really understand good practice? To a certain extent, I think we have been somewhat remiss in that since I've been here since before the beginning, I can remember the excitement when I bought that first, monthly electronics magazine that had this crazy idea of a computer that you could build for yourself, right?
A personal computer
from the MTIS company.
MTIS.
Right. Model Telemetry Instrumentation Systems. The original MSI computer was designed for you to be able to measure how high your model rocket flew.
All right.
Now, this is one of two great conversations between the parent and child that I wish I had a little fly-sized microphone on the wall. Okay? One of them was Michael Crichton telling his parents, Mom and Dad, I know you put me through medical school, but I'm going to write novels now.
No.
Okay. Now, admittedly, he wrote Andromeda Strain, and it was a bestseller while he was practicing medicine, so it wasn't that much of a thing. But the other one was Bill Gates, who's in Harvard at the time, and decides he's going to move to New Mexico to work for a model rocket computer company and write BASIC.
Oh, no.
How do you explain that to Mom and Dad? Okay, I was going to Harvard. I don't think he actually told them for the first 6 months or something. He probably had – I think he had probably somebody in the dorm at at Harvard who would just say, oh, well, he's gone right now. I think he's at the library.
I don't think we should be telling these stories in front of Lisa, because she's going to come up to me with a zinger like that someday.
See, she's not paying attention.
She's not paying attention. Good.
This is the advantage of the teenager at that age, you know. We're old, thinking, Ben. What could he be saying that's worthwhile?
She could...
But
and she's going to come up to me with a zinger like that one day. I'm dropping out of college, and I'm going to go on the road with a band, and I'm going to. And she's going, yeah, but look at what happened to Bill Gates.
Mm-hmm.
They thought that was a bad idea.
You know, I've ridden the wave here. Okay, I've been here since day one of all this stuff coming into play.
Before the Big Bang,
I decided not to be a professional opera singer and to pursue this path in my life because I could see that people these days don't get this. This was a revolution.
Yep.
This changed the way the world works, and you could be there right at the beginning of it. I mean, it's an opportunity you rarely have in life, and I've done okay by it. You know, I'm no Bill Gates, but, you know, I'm comfortable, you know.
Puts foot on the plate, keeps but, the family you know, warm.
One of the old things that has been an all-time joke. I mean, there's two really great jokes that I probably will never go stale in terms of technology and especially computers. Number one is, if computer engineering, right, mm-hmm. if software engineering was the same as mechanical engineering, it would be great. If mechanical engineering was the same as software engineering, the first woodpecker that came along would destroy civilization. Because we call it engineering, but really, at this point, computer programming is an art.
It's half art, and it has an element of art, it has an element of science, mm-hmm. and it has an element of a craft, you know, almost like a practice.
Yes, it is. It's a craft, and it's a practice, and I don't think we document the craft well enough, and we do not mentor the craft well enough, the way you're saying, mm-hmm. with this library. But I'll tell you, it's an art, and it has become something at the level of a craft, but I'll still argue with you that it's not a science. It's not a thing where you can do this and get reproducible results at the end. To be a science, we have to get to that level, and I'm not sure we're quite there yet.
If done right, see, you know, if you do your software development properly, you should have a test plan and mm-hmm, test mm-hmm. results, and you should verify
those test
results.
And that's part of what you're talking about with all these best practices.
Yes.
And people don't learn that unless somebody teaches that. It's right. not something that's part of formal training. And if anything should be part of formal training, it should be that. Because quite frankly, the true artist programmers, Joe that I talked about, mm-hmm. he was an artist when he wrote code. Okay? Not everybody can be an artist.
Right.
I'm speaking as an artist here. Okay? I may know, you know, I may not know, I may not know what I like, but I know art. Okay? And there's this magical transition that happens in the difference between music and art, or the difference between something that's a nice drawing or a nice painting and art.
Sure.
And in that craft of writing code, it can transcend into something that truly is art. And not everybody who tries that path is going to become a true software artist. But they could all be good craftsmen, and they could probably be good scientists if somebody told them that. The other joke that will never go stale is, of course, the difference between a software salesman and a used car salesman.
Used car salesman knows when he's lying.
That's right.
First, I think that's one of the oldest jokes I had on this
podcast. And it's never going to be wrong.
Yeah, I can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. Steve Jobs. Oh, yeah, I can do that. What's a megaflop?
I think
that actually sounds like that old comedy routine that Bill Cosby used to do about Noah. You know, God's talking to Noah, and Noah says,
oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, Lord.
I want you to.
What's a cubit?
You know? Yeah. I want you to build an ark.
That's right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to make it 400 cubits long. 400 cubits long.
200 cubits wide.
200 cubits wide.
50 cubits high, I think it was. Whatever, yeah.
Is that Noah?
Lord!
Yes, Noah.
What's a cubit?
That's right. So, you know, this, you know, okay, to go along with my whole theme here of we got this predefined idea.
Right.
Okay. Windows version 1, not even a good pretty face on top of a command line. Windows version 2, yeah. Windows version 3 at least looked kind of okay, but it was really just a pretty face on top of the command line.
Yep.
Windows 3.1, I remember how excited I was about Windows 3.1 because it only crashed my computer 3 times a day and I had to reboot. That was a big improvement. Okay. Once Windows 95 came along, which I think was just after the suit. Yep. You remember the suit when Apple sued Microsoft because they were stealing all their intellectual property? We're not going to go into the whole thing about how Smalltalk had this demo that Steve Jobs went to where they had mice and icons and he stole that whole thing from Xerox PUC. Okay, that's independent. Okay. But they had that suit. They settled the suit. Microsoft is not copying the Macintosh operating system. Right. That was settled legally in court. Windows 95 comes along. You talked about having shortcut keys.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
If I want to figure out what the shortcut key is in Windows 95, I close my eyes. I pretend the alternate key is the command key. I'm done.
Right, right. Well, and now there's even a Windows key.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but the Windows key brings up the
whoa, smack the microphone.
Brings up the menu, you know? It doesn't do what the command key does. But right, I'm sitting right. there. I can do all of the shortcut keys straight out of the Mac operating system in Windows. And they all do exactly what they're supposed to do. But they're not copying that operating system, Chuck. And don't you say they are, because the judge said that they're not. So when you talk about what's underneath the covers, how many people do anything on the command line anymore in Windows? I do on a regular basis, right, but I do stuff with servers.
Yep.
The average person looked at Windows 95 and never turned back, and they don't care anymore that you can do start, run, CMD, and get to a command line. They wouldn't know what to do with the command line if they brought it up.
I've got people on my help desk that don't know the difference between a forward slash and a backslash.
This is a problem.
That's a problem when you're trying to communicate.
Yes.
And if the person on the help desk doesn't know, how are they supposed to communicate it to the...
The users are not. And you can't just say slash, you know?
No.
And
well, where, I can, and the, you'd know
where's
what
the
what
key? Anyway, but...
But it's crucial because there are times when, you know, you need to renew your DHCP number.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, something happened. Well, just do a ipconfig slash release and slash renew, and you're good to go. Which key is
which
that?
Slash, yes. And so some things like that, they still need to. It's a funny thing, though, because I've lived through this whole transition and working in IT. I remember when we still had manuals where we would go into sites. There's a site in Des Moines I went into where everybody was still using a 3270 terminal on there to talk to the mainframe.
Those were big beasts.
So the
speaking
first
of big
thing,
beasts, the cat just jumped.
The cat's here. They have a very pretty cat here. He looks like my old cat.
Come here,
anyway. And she looks like my old cat. And, you know, so the first thing you do is you put the PC on their desk. This is still running OS 2, mind you, right?
Yep.
And you put the PC on their desk so they get used to the 3270 terminal emulator instead of the regular terminal because you had less function keys and you had to do all this weird stuff. We had instructions on how to use a mouse because people didn't know about mice in business communities. I remember... People telling me, I mean, when computers first came into play, nobody who was a manager or an executive had a computer on their desk because those were like typewriters, and executives don't use typewriters. That's what their administrative assistant uses. I remember a great demo we did. We used to do these demos when I worked for the California company.
Sorry, you have manager in your title. You don't get a computer.
We did this demo. We could always do better demos in the Missouri you know, division of the company than the California in two different ways. Number one, our demos of real estate were real-time video views where you'd click on rooms and it would go from room to room and you could walk from room to room to room, right? Mm-hmm. The California demo was you click on this room and it shows you a picture of the room. So technologically, we were ahead of them. But also, our demo was about houses you could buy in the middle 80s in Overland Park, Kansas. Theirs was about houses you could buy in Palo Alto, California in the middle 80s. And you'd look at both demos and you'd say, I can buy a 50-year-old ranch-style house that needs to be completely redone in Palo Alto, California for $1.5 million, or I can spend $250,000 to build a brand new house in Overland Park, Kansas. So there was a big dichotomy there. Twice the size. It was kind of interesting when I worked for that California company when we got bought out that I was living in a new house, and it was somewhat of an interesting idea to think that I lived in a house that was bigger, newer, and nicer than the CEO of the company that I worked at. There's an advantage of living in the Midwest.
Yes, there are. Hey, Bruce, we're going to have to wrap this up. We've been going for 50 minutes already.
Can we have?
Yeah. Ooh.
This is a little long for freestyle.
Yeah, that's what I said. I'm going to retool this as a technorama. We'll figure out how to get the beginning and ending in there later. Thank you very much. It's been enjoyable.
You know, I was just kidding about the weekly show because I said it as well as I can that you and Craig made the right decision.
Thank
to
you.
Put family above that weekly show. I miss it more than I can even, you know, say.
Now you've been an intimate
but,
part of it.
It was the interchange. It was the back and forth between you and Craig. And, you know, the one thing I can say is, okay, Mark the Encaffeinated One guested on Technorama, and then the next week you quit, and I never got a chance to.
No, there's no connection in there.
So now I've had my chance to co-host. Craig wasn't here, but
there
still.
You go. Yeah, we did try to see if Craig was on Skype, see if he wanted to join.
I know, but, you know, he's an hour ahead of us and probably was asleep 2 hours ago, you know.
Thank you very much, Bruce. It's been a real treat.
And I get to say it, right? It's
wait,
the end
wait
of Technorama.
Wait for it. Yeah, thanks for listening. And until next time, tell a friend about Technorama. And as always, a binary high five.
101.
Yay!